Chuck Collins is the founder of the Institute for Policy Studies, an expert on wealth inequality and an advocate for race-based reparations in America. The author of Born on Third Base and Is Inequality in America Irreversible was a keynote speaker at the 2018 Slow Living Summit, where he sat down with correspondent Mark Russo to share his views.
Hi, this is Mark Russo, joined by Chuck Collins. Chuck, thank you for joining us.
Thanks. Good to be with you, Mark.
So tell me a little bit about your background and how you began to explore income inequality and the world of alternative finance.
Well, I think I was affected as a young person growing up in the Detroit area and just in a city where there was enormous polarization between city and suburb, rich and poor, white and black, and I think that really had an effect on me. But, you know, I think what happened really is starting in the late 70s and 80s, you know, we started to become a much more unequal society. Both wages started to sort of flatten out and more income and wealth was flowing to the very, very top. And I could kind of see that in all kinds of ways, particularly working at the community level on affordable housing. I could just see how that was affecting people. But I also grew up, you know, I was born on third base. I grew up in a wealthy, affluent family in suburban Detroit. So I sort of had the perspective, the other side of the story, which is seeing how wealth was multiplying, wealth was growing. How I would describe it is how advantage was accelerating for people at the top and how disadvantage was kind of, and barriers were growing for everyone else. So that really got me interested, and I helped start a group called United for a Fair Economy to do kind of advocacy about inequality. And then for the last a dozen years, I've been working at the Institute for Policy Studies. And I co-edit a website called inequality.org, which for your listeners would be a good resource to learn more about both the picture as well as what people are doing to reverse inequality.
What role can capital play in remediating the damage to our psychological environment, our living environment, and our built environment that was largely caused by our capitalist economy?
Well, I think, you know, this conference is focused a lot on investment, but I would argue that probably the most important thing we could do is actually tax high concentrations of wealth, high incomes, and invest in public goods like public infrastructure, access to higher education, access to training and skills, subsidized affordable housing, you know. So I think there's a way in which investors or investment capital can support certain kinds of enterprises. And in this case, we're looking at here at this conference, looking at the, you know, how do we build a regional food system? But to be honest, I'm not sure we're going to fundamentally reverse inequality through for-profit investing. There has to be some fundamental redistribution of wealth and power. I guess I would say there's somewhat of a limitation. You know, if we're trying to deploy capital, maybe it should be without strings, without debt. You know, how did a white middle class get built in this country after World War II? Through debt-free higher education and 1% fixed rate 30-year loans and for purchasing houses and farms. I mean, we taxed wealth at higher levels and invested it in a way that expanded wealth and opportunity for a lot of people. So that seems like a good formula to me.
You're one of the few folks that I know of who is exploring the idea of reparations on a broad scale in the United States and how the economics of a historical justice program might work or look. Can you explore that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a kind of complicated discussion, but the way I would look at it is, you know, we have this racial wealth divide now. The median white wealth is 35 times black wealth, you know, 25 times Latino wealth. And that is not the result of differences in effort, or it's a result of the historic legacy of racism in wealth building. And it's kind of where the past shows up in the present. So people say, well, slavery was a long time ago, or, you know, Jim Crow laws don't exist anymore. But those practices really did limit and in some cases destroyed black-owned wealth, talking about particularly people of African heritage. So, you know, there's precedents around the world for reparations after World War II. After the collapse of Nazi Germany, there was a global reparations for people who, descendants of people who survived the Holocaust, and that included both cash and educational benefits, and it included investing in education institutions and so that people could learn about that history. Similarly, after World War II and the internment of Japanese Americans who were literally stripped of their properties, put in concentration camps during World War II, the United States admitted that that was wrong and actually gave cash benefits to the descendants. Ronald Reagan signed that into law. So we haven't really grappled. We're sort of still in a state of arrested development in grappling with the legacy of racism, particularly for people of African descent. And I think we could do similar, both invest in cultural institutions, educational programs. Every high school graduate in this country sort of understands, really fundamentally understands the role of slavery, of the Black Holocaust, if you will, the impact of Jim Crow's separate and unequal, just our history. That should be part of it, as well as why wouldn't we do the same things that I just talked about that help build a white middle class? Why wouldn't we have a first-time homebuyer program, you know, 1%, 35-year loans, zero interest, you know, 1% interest rate that enable people to buy houses or free, debt-free higher education? That could be part of a reparations program. So, you know, I think for several decades, there's been a proposal, H.R. 40, to have a study commission at the federal level just to look at this. But we should create kind of a people's reparations commission, just, you know, led by people of African heritage, exploring what the debt looks like. You know, how does that show up today? And what is our societal responsibility? And sometimes you hear people say, well, you know, look, I'm Irish. My relatives didn't even show up here till 50 years after slavery or whatever. Well, the fact is, if you're white in the culture, you actually still have benefited from sort of the historic compounding advantages accruing to white Americans. So it's really worth it. It's in all of our interest to really grapple with that so that we can understand how the past affects the present and then, you know, overcome that together, move forward together by repairing both reparations and repair. That's the spirit that we should enter into it.
It's comforting in a way to think of when these social problems that are so big, to think that they can be broken down and really addressed at a very basic level, things that you would just expect your own family or other, you would want other people to have, that might create more avenues towards accomplishing this on a political level than the way that the discourse currently operates around these issues of race and of property ownership and things like that. Yeah. So what you've outlined a number of them already, but what would you say are some of the most effective strategies for addressing income inequality and bringing wealth home, as you say?
Yeah. Well, if we want to look at societies today that have less inequality, we don't have to go too far. We can, you know, look at Canada that has three times the social mobility now of the United States. We can look at the Nordic countries. And one thing they have in common is they have a very high floor, meaning that there's sort of a social safety net, access to health insurance, access to basic income. If you lose your job, you are able to get lifelong job retraining. If you have a child, you get maternal and parental leave. So there's a sort of a floor, a higher floor. But those societies also invest in public goods like higher education, job training, access to childcare, things that actually sort of help create a level playing field. And then the most controversial but most important missing piece of the discussion is we need to look at things that reduce the concentration of wealth and power at the top. We need to have campaign finance reform that limits the impact of big money. We need to have a progressive tax system that taxes high income and wealth, invests it in public goods. And that's what good societies do, is they recycle opportunity. If you have $20 million, you should pay a higher percentage of your wealth and income in taxes, and that should be invested in a way that helps the next generation have the same opportunities. So, you know, we can reverse inequality. We can learn from other countries. We can look at the U.S. experience after World War II when we taxed wealth and high incomes and invested in public goods that helped build a white middle class. We don't want to have discrimination this time around, but the lessons are there for us to draw from. So it's a political problem. It's not an economic issue. It's not like these inequalities are caused by the weather. It's a political problem. And the good news is people really want to live in a much more equitable society. The undercurrent of the population right now really wants to fundamentally shift away from this march toward plutocracy that we're living through. And polls show 70-80% of the population would like to raise a minimum wage, have a greater sort of level of health security. They believe the wealthy should pay their fair share of taxes. So there's a widespread support, but our political system at the national level has really been captured by the billionaires, and that's why we're kind of stuck in this moment. But meanwhile, the pressure is going to keep building for fundamental change.
We can only hope. Actually, we can do a lot more than hope.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is in our hands. You know, things could go badly. We could continue to pull apart. But I actually think in the next 2 years, you know, remember how the Occupy movement sort of burst on the scene and people didn't really like, whoa, where did that come from? I think we're ready for young people to lead a movement around eliminating student debt. I think we're looking at, there's all kinds of pressure to deal with the fact that we're living on yesterday's infrastructure, and that we need to address the historic legacy of racism and through some form of reparations. Those are all things that I think we're going to start to see kind of burst even more on the public scene. And those social movements are going to push us to reduce these extreme inequalities.
I'm looking forward to it.
Well, you're going to be part of it. And thanks for having the conversation. And again, if people want to learn more, check out inequality.org as kind of a portal for information and data and inspiring examples of what people are doing to reverse inequality.
Thanks, Chuck.
Thanks, Mark.
That was correspondent Mark Russo with author Chuck Collins. To learn more about Chuck's work on income inequality, visit inequality.org.